Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, WBUR is examining the consequences of the landmark 1993 law that changed K-12 education in Massachusetts. Our Edify team is bringing you a series called Pass-Fail, Evaluating 25 Years of Education Reform. And today, we're going to take a look at the MCAS, the statewide standardized test that's been both credited with helping make Massachusetts schools some of the best in the nation, and perhaps exacerbating the very achievement gaps it was meant to help close. Reporters Carrie Young and Max Larkin look at one group of Massachusetts students who are struggling.
Over the years, immigrants arrived to begin new lives in America. To them, the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of all their hopes and dreams.
So, Carrie, I was in this classroom in Revere a few weeks ago. The kids were doing a unit on the Statue of Liberty.
Your parents came from a different country, right? Yeah. Did they come on a ship or did they come on an airplane?
Airplane, but my mother came the first one, and like after 6 months we came to America.
When I was growing up, Revere was kind of an Irish-Italian enclave, a little beach town north of Boston.
Yeah, but I was looking at the census data, and there has been a huge influx of immigrants there in the last few years at least.
Like these two young students we're about to hear from, Joshua Mendez and Anthony Ramos.
English isn't my first language, so.
It's not your first language?
No,
Spanish was my first language.
Portuguese was my first language.
Joshua was born in Brazil. Anthony was also born elsewhere. And they're both now third graders and best friends at the Garfield Elementary School in Revere. When I visited, they had just taken the English language MCAS test for the first time.
It felt nervous the first time.
Yeah, because like I didn't understand some words at the beginning. I guess
you get
it was
more
easier.
Worried because
it's like a
really
big test.
Yeah.
It's a big test.
I get scared.
Joshua and Anthony have been in the country for several years now, Carrie, and it's worth noting they have classmates arriving from overseas every week.
So once a student's been in the country for a year, he or she is supposed to take the MCAS, right?
Exactly right. And their teacher, Penny Caliavis, sees a lot of kids like that, and she says she feels for those students.
When I think about it empathetically, I say, oh my gosh, if I had to take a standardized test in a language that I didn't know, I would be anxious and worried and scared.
So Caliavis says she sees her job as kind of stress management in part. She has little lines that she tells this global classroom of kids.
In the long run, it doesn't make up who they are. It doesn't make up their success. It's just kind of like a measurement.
That kind of measurement, though, was a huge part of the 1993 education reform bill, to have statewide academic standards and then measure how students keep up with them. Here's former state senator Tom Birmingham, who co-authored the bill.
Unless we test, we don't have any way to determine whether we're succeeding or failing in our education.
But in important ways, the MCAS isn't just a measurement. Low scores were supposed to allow state officials to target schools with changes.
At first, many in the state's Latino community saw the promise of that approach to education reform. Here's Miren Uriarte, a sociologist. She had already been studying Latino students in Massachusetts when the 1993 bill came around, and that's why she was on board.
Because it couldn't get any worse. The dropout rates were through the roof.
The reform bill pumped a lot of money into the state's poorest districts. And Uriarte says, as a researcher, she kind of liked having solid numbers.
But here's where she says the reform lost its way. When the first MCAS scores came back, Latino students had posted what she called really dismal numbers. Now, it'd be one thing if policymakers had then targeted their schools with effective changes that could help them improve. But that's not what happened.
In 2002, Massachusetts voters passed an initiative that forced all students to learn in English only. That's called Sheltered English Immersion.
It was sold on very shaky scientific grounds.
Not only did that bill not close the gap, in fact, it's now regarded as kind of a major policy blunder. The legislature finally got rid of the immersion requirement last year.
Then the state legislature, still trying to close that gap, sets up a system in 2010 that puts the poorest performing schools at risk of being taken over by the state.
Even today, the state is running three entire school districts, Lawrence, Holyoke, and Southbridge, with a mixed record to show for it. All of them are majority Latino. Again, Miren Uriarte.
That's always been my complaint. You know, I'm all for accountability, but let's all be accountable, not just the kids.
That's where we are today. So is there anything that's working for English learners? Well, in Revere, educators have managed to keep up their MCAS scores, despite their rapidly changing demographics.
And they'd argue, Carrie, it's because they're focusing on everything but test prep.
It's hot.
For example, at the Garfield Elementary, that's the school we were talking about earlier, they've added emotional supports and another ESL teacher. They even have this thing called a Newcomers Academy, where immigrant students of all ages can play games and speak and learn in more than one language. When I was there, the teacher and principal were modeling clothes so kids could learn the English names for them.
What is it?
Hat!
All right, good. What about this?
Scarf.
Scarf or a sweater?
So that seems to be working in Revere, but it remains to be seen if it can work in other districts, too.
And it raises a question about how to solve problems in education. Is it okay to kind of bumble along and by trial and error eventually find things that work?
That's WBUR's Max Larkin and Carrie Young taking a look at MCAS and English language learners in particular. Now, you know, here at Radio Boston, we like numbers, so let's dig into the numbers for a second, because there is a great data visualization at WBUR.org, and if you go there, you will find, for example, that when it comes to statewide student scores on the 10th grade English MCAS, about 40% of English language learners score needs improvement or worse. 22% of Latino students are also still struggling, 16% of African American students, 19% of economically disadvantaged kids, 32% of students with disabilities. Compare that to the roughly 5% of white and Asian students who need improvement or are failing on the 10th grade English MCAS. So according to its supporters, MCAS is the tool that allows us to measure that achievement gap and then aim for better outcomes. But according to its detractors, the test itself may be contributing to that gap. So does it help or does it hurt? Joining us now to discuss is Ricardo Rosa. He's an assistant professor of educational leadership and policy at UMass Dartmouth. He's also author, co-author, I should say, of Capitalism's Educational Catastrophe. Professor Rosa, welcome to Radio Boston.
Very glad to be here. Thank you.
Also with us is Carrie Rodriguez. She's the founder of Massachusetts Parents United, a parent advocacy organization. They include amongst their donors the Walton Family Foundation, the Barr Foundation, and the National Philanthropic Trust. Carrie Rodriguez has been very active in educational issues in Massachusetts for several years. Welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ricardo Rosa, let me just start with you. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to use your own family as an example here. You've had your kids opt out of MCAS.
That's correct.
Why?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the test is, you know, any form of high-stakes test amounts to a form of educational malpractice, in my opinion. And it has nothing to do with accountability. It has a whole lot to do with a whole lot of profit-making off of public education. It's a $500 billion business, and folks want to cash in. You have major businesses that want to cash in on this thing. I think that, you know, it's problematic in the sense that, you know, whenever any quantitative social indicator is used to make social, to use as a decision-making tool, what happens is that it's very often subject to corruption. And that's precisely what goes on in public schools today. I mean, you have children who score very low who are not being tended to. You have children who score very high who are not being tended to. And most of the focus is on so-called sort of bubble kids, you know, those kids that are just at the margins. And that's problematic for me. That's not education.
Okay. So, Carrie Rodriguez, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I don't understand how we're supposed to identify inequity unless we have data points to back it up. For generations, you know, people in our communities have known that our schools have been underperforming and underserving our communities. So until we have actually had data points to back up that argument, we were reduced to anecdote and saying, oh, don't worry about it. Your school is great. Everything's happy in there. Look at all the sunshines on the walls. Unfortunately, when our kids are actually leaving those schools, they're not adequately prepared to go into the workforce or to, you know, go to higher education. They're not ready to go. So unless we have data points, we cannot make improvements. So it just seems kind of crazy that we would say, okay, we're identifying that there are problem schools so that we can actually go after and target these situations, and just saying we're going to throw out the test because we don't like the results we're getting.
So I want to try and bounce back and forth between the two of you as much as possible in the time that we have. So forgive me. I don't mean to interrupt a lot, but forgive me if in advance if I do. But Carrie Rodriguez, I mean, I think one of the first pieces of pushback that folks might give to what you're saying is there's a lot of people out there who believe that maybe the data itself is not entirely reliable because the test itself isn't actually measuring what kids are learning or how much they know. There may be some cultural biases in the test itself. So we're making judgments on educational outcomes on data that may not be reliable.
And I certainly would not say that the MCAS is perfect. I think we have a lot of work to do on it. I think just like we need to work on the diversity in terms of the educational leadership we see in schools themselves, from the classroom management to the administration, we also need to take a look at our diversity in terms of our testing systems and whether or not they're adequately reaching, and are culturally competent and reaching these communities they need to reach. So I'm not going to say that I'm going to defend the MCAS as being the perfect tool by which to measure. But we do need a tool to measure.
Assessment of some kind.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Ricardo Rosa, let me turn back to you, because this, again, it's at the heart of what MCAS's greatest supporters have constantly said, that, 25 years ago, there were huge gaps in outcomes in students. There are persistent gaps now, but that without knowing what those gaps are, how can we make steps forward in improving the quality of the education kids are receiving?
But we know, first of all, I'm not a big fan of this term achievement gap, because as you said, these tests are highly problematic. So in the end, what are youth actually achieving on? And furthermore, it also paints this picture that white affluent kids are standing still, while others are catching up to them. They're constantly moving as well. So I don't like achievement gap. I prefer the use of the term opportunity gap. And we've always known, who's succeeding, who's not succeeding in public schools. We don't need tests to measure them, to measure that. If you look at the tests, it's highly, it correlates to socioeconomic to income, to poverty. The issue is poverty. The issue is not needing more data, to prove or to show who's failing and who's not doing well in school so that we can better serve them. The issue is poverty. So we need to look at that. We need to take that very seriously. We need to realize that public and social policy is educational policy. Families that don't have a living, don't have adequate wage, don't have adequate benefits, can't find decent public transportation to get to work, are families who are going to have kids who are likely not to have strong educational outcomes.
Carrie, did you want to respond?
I don't disagree with him at all. I think we definitely need to address all of these situations as a whole. Our organization deals with poverty issues, deals with our number one issue that we talk about is building safer neighborhoods. If we can't have any assurance that our kids can walk down the street with, being able to be safe and to be healthy and to use our parks and to not be influenced by gangs or gun violence. That's number one. Poverty issues, dealing with, do we have a safe home to live in, affordable housing, all of these things. Mm-hmm. But just because we are economically disadvantaged, it does not mean that our children are not capable of achievement. And I think the real problem is the belief gap that we have in Massachusetts, the belief that because children are of color, because children grow up in economic disadvantaged situations, that they're not capable of achievement and proficiency. And it's horrifying to me as a parent when I hear some of our educators start to talk about, well, some of our kids, they're just capable of growth. And if we're seeing growth in our schools, that's enough. It's not enough. Mm. My children are capable of being proficient. Just because they're Latino, it does not mean that they're not capable of being proficient.
And so how is MCAS helping get to that proficiency, though?
I think being able to assess where we have problems in our school system, where we are not serving our children well, where they are not getting access to high-quality education, we need to know where those problem points are so we can target them, so we can add additional funding, so we can address those issues. Because there are some schools in Massachusetts that are getting this done, that are capable of it. We need to take those ideas and implement them where they're needed.
So, Ricardo Rosa, a little earlier today, in preparing for this conversation, we spoke with Bob Lee, who's the chief MCAS analyst with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. And he said, told us a couple of things. One, that DESE has a bias and sensitivity committee whose job it is to review the test and items to make sure that it's not culturally biased. And then he says, to Carrie's point, that one of the purposes of MCAS is to reveal the gaps, and if there are any, to make the data available to schools to make it clear which subgroups need additional assistance. They show those results and hope they can be used to find solutions. So is that not a useful tool?
No, it's not. Again, we already know where the gaps are. The gaps are, these tests, the results of these tests are highly correlated to income, highly correlated to zip code and where you live. So we already know that. These tests are instruments that are being imposed in our schools for the plain, simple fact of profit-making. You know, that's it. I mean, they have no educational value whatsoever. In fact, you know, for an organization that's against poverty, you know, these tests, these high-stakes tests actually exacerbate poverty, if
How?
Anything.
How?
Well, because you have a lot of youth who are not able to graduate as a result of these graduation requirements. You have to pass this do-or-die test in order to graduate, regardless of how well you do in your classes, you know, in your classwork. And so you have kids, you know, who don't have diplomas, you know, who are not able to get adequate employment, who are not able to form stable families, and so forth and so on. I find that as highly problematic. Any organization that fights against poverty should be an organization that also fights against high-stakes testing.
Carrie, go ahead.
But what does graduation actually mean if you aren't proficient in reading, in math? I mean, where are you going? What job are you taking? I mean, take a look at the remedial education rates we see in our community colleges. It's upwards of 70% for our community because we're handing our children a piece of paper that says you're prepared, you're ready to go, you're ready to launch, enter the workforce, go on to higher education. Then they get to the doors of college and they find out they don't have the skills, that they're not adequately prepared.
Can I just ask you about that for a second? I mean, so these are kids who are going to community college and, as you say, still need remedial work with things like reading, but ostensibly they've passed the MCAS, the 10th grade MCAS. So what good is MCAS doing in
because
that case?
Because it's not good enough, quite clearly. I mean, where the MCAS is not the end-all be-all, and I think we should continue to rigorously challenge our kids. I don't think that MCAS is perfect by any means. Okay. We need to make sure. My goal as a parent is not to make sure my child gets the highest score in the MCAS. I want my child to have a successful, wonderful life and be able to go to college and achieve whatever they want to achieve. But unless I have given them the foundation and education they need, the core, the basics, yeah. Like what are we actually giving these kids?
Ricardo Rosa, I know you want to get
MCAS is not the foundation. It doesn't provide the foundation. What it does is it's a test that measures a very small amount of a wider knowledge system. And so what happens is that teachers begin to game the system. It's no different. Daniel Koretz has also pointed this out. It's no different than Volkswagen and sort of these emission systems that Volkswagen tries to beat. You know, what's happening in schools right now because of these high-stakes tests is that teachers and administrators are constantly focused on sort of beating this test on test prep instead of real education. I mean, that's the problem that we're up against. And so by beating the system, I'm not talking about sort of erasing scores and placing the correct scores on children's exams. I'm talking about the very fact that test prep is the name of the game. I mean, that, for me, is highly problematic. It's about just trying to beat the system. It's not about education.
Well, it's almost a coin flip who gets the last word here. So I'm not picking sides, but Carrie Rodriguez, you got about 10 seconds if you want another shot at this.
When it comes to the high-stakes testing, I hate the fact that it's high-stakes because I want to know who's creating that pressure cooker for our kids. And I think that this should be a measure we use to improve our system. We've got to do it.
But we have that. NAEP, we have that. Well, we've had that.
We'll come back and talk about that test on another day because that's an interesting thought to end on. Ricardo Rosa, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership and Policy at UMass Dartmouth, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And Carrie Rodriguez, founder of Massachusetts Parents United, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.